Secretary Bob Berglund, joining us today, Secretary of Agriculture from 1977 to 1981 under the Carter administration. Secretary Berglund, at the end of the administration in 1981, became chairman of Farmland World Trade until 1982. He became vice president, general manager of the National Rural Electric Cooperative Association, a great friend of NAFB, as we know. In that capacity, he lobbied both Congress and the regulatory agencies on behalf of the cooperatives in the electricity business. Throughout his life, he's been considered a tireless advocate of the working class, rural Americans, and particularly farmers and ranchers. He said, "Mark, I've been retired 15 years, but proud to say I still live in the great state of Minnesota." Secretary Bob Berglund. Next, we have Secretary John Block, Secretary of Agriculture under Ronald Reagan from 1981 to 1986. Of course, that meant he was greatly involved, heavily involved in the Farm Bill in 1985. Secretary Block served as President of Food Distributors International, currently a senior policy advisor for Olson Frank Wida, is a Washington law and lobbying firm that specializes in representing interests before USDA and related federal agencies. He also, of course, has a syndicated weekly radio show you are familiar with, 500 stations in 30 states, quite a network, Secretary. It's a three-minute program. John Block reports from Washington. Secretary John Block. Secretary Clayton Yeider served as our trade representative from the 1985 to 89 and our Secretary of Agriculture from 1989 to 1991 under George H.W. Bush. Secretary Yeider serves as director of Caterpillar Corporation, also Texas Instruments Corporation, ConAgra Foods, and Weyerhaeuser. He also served on the board of directors of Chicago Climate Exchange and FMC Corporation. Currently serves on the board of directors of Neogen Corporation and Burlington Capital Group. Big Ten is represented here big time today from the state of Nebraska, Secretary Clayton Yeider. So we're Illinois, Minnesota. I didn't mention Illinois, Secretary Block, but so we have Illinois, Nebraska, and Minnesota represented here today. I've asked each one of them for a few minutes of reflection to take us back a few years and remember things that happened under their administration and thoughts they would have this afternoon. So we're going to start with you, Secretary Berglund.
I'd been a member of Congress from Minnesota for 7 years when I was asked by President Carter to surrender an honest job and go to work for him as cabinet secretary. And I talked to my dad about it. He said, good idea. I talked to mom. She thought that was nuts, going from the fire to the frying pan to the fire. But my years in the Congress introduced me to hard-nosed big-time politics, and especially the business of compromise and negotiating. That, in my day, that was a common stock in trade. In my day, the partisanship was not near as heavy. We didn't require much money to run a campaign. We were courteous to a fault. Anybody who impugned the integrity of another member was staked out, forced to stand in front of the House, and a public apology was required. Everything was civil. You could disagree without being disagreeable. That's all gone down the drain. It's just gotten to be ugly. And I don't know how people can survive that place now. And the challenge is up to us to figure out how we get the wheels back on track, because they are not now. There's just anybody who proposes a compromise is considered a traitor. And that's just simply not going to work. I had been on board the job about 3 months, and I had a call from Congressman Evans from Colorado, a friend of mine. He said, would I come out to Springfield, Colorado with him to attend a meeting of a newly formed farmers and ranchers protest organization called the American Agriculture Movement? I said, who are they? He said, I really don't know. But he said, there's lots of them, and they get pretty noisy. So I said, well, sure, I'll come. And so I did. I went out there in a school in Springfield, and they said they made it clear to me they didn't come there to hear me. They came there for me to hear them. I said, good enough. So I put my book down and said, who's at it? And it was just kind of a wild and woolly thing. And we got out of there, and they were complaining bitterly about their own private personal circumstances. Most of them had borrowed more money than they could pay back, and they were trying to figure out how to blame somebody for their mistake, and I was handy, so that's they took off on me. They were demanding that we establish income payments and price support structures such that that their loan could be made whole. I said, we can't do it. We're not going to do it. We're not even going to try. And I got booed hard. It was getting unruly. Finally, it was time to go, and I said to my host, how do we get out of here? He said, well, I've got a squad car right outside, a police car, just in case. So we got out there and into this police car and got ready to leave, and a kid come barreling down at us in a four-wheel drive tractor. And the cop got out and drew a shotgun. I said, and he stopped. The kid stopped. I said, well, you've killed him? He said, no, but we'd have killed his tractor. We'd zeroed in on the tires and the radiator. That was my introduction to Washington protest organization. We got out of there, and when I got back to D.C., I said a friend of mine at the Bureau of Agricultural Economics, tell me what's going on here? I mean, there's something really seriously troubling these people. They were not there trying to pull my leg. They're in trouble. He said, well, it has to do with debt. He said they've gambled and lost. They bought land. They pay rent that they can't afford. They're buying machinery they can't afford. How they ever got them stuck themselves into it, they'll never know. But they are in trouble. They are what we today would call underwater. And that's what happened. And serious trouble rose out of that. There was a major economic collapse in the farms and ranches in those years. Prices were not what they had been, and so they took to the streets. But there were banks that couldn't survive with the bad credits they had made. My son-in-law is a banker, and he said, "We have never ever made a bad loan ever. We've made lots of good loans that have gone bad." And that's what happened. Good loans that went bad. And the banking industry was really hurt badly. But anyhow, we survived that experience and all learned from it. I'm glad to be here.
Secretary Block.
All right. Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here. I have been coming to farm broadcaster meetings for more than 20 years, and I see so many familiar faces. Many of these familiar faces I only see once a year when I come to the meeting, occasionally when they come to Washington, D.C. My background is a farm in Illinois, still have the farm, still go back there every month, and spend 3 or 4 days, and spend a little more time than that during the harvest. I usually skip January because it's too damn cold, but I come back to Illinois all the time because that's where my roots are and that's where my investment is. I go back when I graduated from high school in Knoxville, Illinois, went to the West Point Military Academy, became a member of the 101st Airborne Division, jumped out of perfectly good airplanes for about 4 or 5 years. Came back and farmed with my dad. Was state director of agriculture. And then, as it turned out, President Reagan was looking for a secretary of agriculture, and Senator Bob Dole said, well, I want a hands-on farmer. I picked up the Wall Street Journal, and my name was on a list of people that he thought might be appropriate for a Secretary of Agriculture. I was shocked. I'd never met Senator Bob Dole. I was stationed there, working there in Illinois, as State Director of Agriculture. I flew out to Washington and met with him and some others, and with his effort and some others, the next thing I knew, the... President or Senator Dole gave to President-elect Ronald Reagan a map of the United States, and little red dots where everybody that had been selected as cabinet members were from. And the note said, look, you've chosen all these cabinet members from the East Coast and from California on the West Coast. You've chosen no one from the heartland. I want you to consider a hands-on farmer, John Block. Within 2 days, I was on an airplane headed for California. And I sat down and I knocked on the door at Ronald Reagan's home in Pacific Palisades, and Nancy answered the door. Ushered me in, cup of coffee, and there was President-elect Ronald Reagan, a guy I'd only shook his hand one time when he was campaigning in Illinois. And there was Ed Meese, Marty Anderson, his chief economist, and one or two more. We spent 2 hours talking about everything, philosophy and how government should work. I was fortunate I was the only guy in the room that knew anything about agriculture. And back to the hotel, phone rings. He says, I want you to be my Secretary of Agriculture. I just said, Mr. President, I'd be proud to serve. I didn't know what I was getting into, Bob, because you had had to fight the wars with all the problems. We still had, especially at that time, extremely high interest rates and a lot of tough times in agriculture. And so we began to try to work our way through those kind of things. And the first thing on my agenda was passed on to President Reagan and to me by President Carter, and that was the grain embargo. And President Ronald Reagan had promised to lift it. The first cabinet meeting we had was in the Blair House because the inauguration had not occurred. So President-elect Reagan had a cabinet meeting there. And they had a list of things, and now different cabinet members are supposed to talk to different subjects, which they did, mostly on defense, Cap Weinberger and defense and concerns about the Soviet Union and other things. But got done, about done, and the president said, does anybody have anything else they want to bring up before we close this out? And, you know, naive as I was, I just raised my hand. Mr. President, you promised to raise the grain embargo. Can we get it done soon? And I almost had my head taken off by Weinberger and three or four others that just said, no, we got to get Soviets, or they got to give us concessions, they got to do this. And the meeting was over. And it took about 2 or 3 months of continued work with the White House and with the president. He'd been shot in the meantime. And then he called me in, along with a couple others, and then we had a cabinet meeting. He says, I'm lifting the grain embargo today. That was a big moment because farmers were suffering, as we all know they were suffering then, for a lot of reasons. And that kind of set the stage for my 5 to 6 years, roughly, serving President Ronald Reagan. We wrote 2 farm bills. And by the time we wrote the second one, we were very much involved in that. And I think we got a pretty good farm bill out of it. It was more market-oriented than we'd had before. The Conservation Reserve Program was put in there. And I wanted that, and I'd lobbied for that for 3 or 4 years. And we finally got that done. It was an honor to serve the president, and especially an honor to serve the agricultural industry. That's where my roots are, in that black soil in Illinois. I've since served on the John Deere board, the ADM board, the Hormel Foods, and continue to do things associated with food and agriculture. And I'm happy to be with all of you here today. Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary. Kind of, wow, it gives you chills to think about the history he's just describing, and we have more from Secretary Clayton Yeider from Nebraska.
Good afternoon, and it's great to see everybody. All of us have had a lot of wonderful experiences doing interviews with people sitting in this room, and at least those of you who have some gray beards and as little hair as I have. The rest of you are probably too young for that. Time goes by so quickly, Jack. You know, it's been more than 20 years since I was secretary, and sure doesn't seem like it's been more than 20 years. And I'm sure for the two of you, it's you have the very same feelings. Time goes by too quickly. We can all tell lots of war stories. I will do a couple of them that I think might fit in the aftermath of what Bob and Jack have had to say. You know, all of us have dearly loved our time working with you folks in this in your segment of our industry, because you perform such a valuable service for American agriculture, and must continue to do so in the future, because there are more people attacking agriculture today than ever before, as you probably know. And we can talk some more about that when we get to the question and answer session, but that's a very, very serious challenge to everybody in this room. Fortunately, when we were secretaries, we had to deal with protest groups of one kind or other from time to time. But the NGO community was so much smaller then than it is now in number of participants. And in number of organizations, it's a much bigger deal now. And while you're talking about protests, Bob, I was thinking to myself, gee, it's too bad we don't have Dan Glickman here to share his war stories with you, because you'll remember that Dan had a little problem with nudists in Rome throwing tomatoes or something at him, the rest of us never had a privilege quite that exciting and enticing. But Dan loves to tell that story. But going back, let me share a couple of quick ones with you. One was I had a little bit of the same experience with President Reagan as you did, Jack, except I did it coming in as a U.S. Trade Representative in 1985 in the second Reagan administration, a little after Jack did. And that was a time when some of you may remember we were really having a lot of problems in international trade in the U.S. for agriculture and everything else. We had the largest trade deficit in the history of the country at that time. A lot of unrest in the business community, both agricultural and non-agriculture. The ag community was very unhappy because our market share worldwide had declined dramatically. Because of export subsidies in the European, what was then called the European Economic Community. They were simply buying market share by dumping surpluses on the world market, and they were taking it all away from us. And I can remember looking at the chart on wheat in that year and the chart for European Economic Community exports of wheat was going like that, and the slope for the U.S. was going exactly the other way. So that was troublesome in agriculture, and the non-agriculture community was really suffering as well from too strong a dollar and a number of other problems, including a lot of trade issues. So at any rate, the White House decided they'd better bring someone else in as USTR at that time to begin to get a handle on this. And the reason I tell this story is because it has a humility aspect in it, and we have to be careful when we're in cabinet positions that we don't let them go to our heads. And in my case, I was in Switzerland when the White House called and asked if I would come to Washington to sit down and talk about this job. And so I came directly from Geneva, Switzerland to Washington, and came to the White House and went in and had my little session with President Reagan. And I came back out, and they told me that they had interviewed more people for that position than any cabinet position in the government. They had 36 candidates, and they narrowed it down, and ultimately they came down to one, and I was the fortunate one in being invited to become U.S. Trade Representative. And the White House Chief of Staff said, "We want to announce this right now." And, geez, I hadn't had a chance to even check in with my wife and family or anybody. And they said, Pat Buchanan was then in the White House. That was before he was causing trouble with everybody else. He said, chief of staff said, you can take Pat's office. Pat's going to draft the press release. While you're in Pat's office, use the phones and call whoever you want to and tell them that you're going to do this because we're going to announce it in about the next 30 minutes. And so I said, okay. And I decided I should call my mother out in Nebraska because I thought she'd feel pretty good about her son becoming a member of the president's cabinet, and especially President Reagan's cabinet, since she was very fond of President Reagan. And I called her, and I tell her what the story was, and there's dead silence on the phone. And I thought, geez, Mom, I thought you'd be happy about this. And her comment was, how long do you have to do that, child? And I thought, mothers always have it right. There are more important things than, serving in cabinet positions or anything. But it was, how long do you have to do that job? So that was my first story. The second one I want to tell you, though, relates to the point that Bob was making about the lack of bipartisanship today and the lack of civility and cooperation. And this is one that really illustrates how things worked so much better 20 or 25 years ago than they do today. Well, one of the first things we decided to do on the trade front at that time was launch the U.S.-Canada free trade negotiations. That was to be the largest bilateral free trade agreement ever negotiated. It was historic from the standpoint of the United States. Bill Brock, my predecessor, had negotiated a U.S.-Israel free trade agreement, but in economic terms, that was very, very small. Canada was a big deal. But we decided to do that because that fit into the trade policy that we wanted to follow. And we had to have Senate Finance Committee approval of launching the negotiation. And we know it would be a fairly close vote. We figured on most of the Republican votes at that time and some Democratic votes. Democrats were in charge of the Senate at the time. Lloyd Benson was the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. But we felt we had the votes lined up. And as you know, at the beginning of a hearing, the chairman goes around and gives every member of the committee a chance to make a statement. And in deference to his Republican colleagues, Senator Benson started with the Republican members of the Finance Committee, and he got around to a good friend and a good friend of mine, Bill Armstrong of Colorado, a very strong, free trade-oriented senator, very conservative guy. And he got to Bill, and Bill said, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to vote against this. And we all were in absolute shock because we felt we had a one-vote margin, and that one-vote margin had just disappeared. And we thought, what in the heck is going on here? How could Bill Armstrong take a position against this? But he did. I'll give you the explanation later of what happened. But the Senator Benson went on around the rest of the group, and he got to Dave Boren of Oklahoma, now president of the University of Oklahoma, as you well know, Democrat, who had no motivation to save that issue at all for us because he's a member of the opposition party. He was going to vote for to move it forward. But he could have killed the whole thing right then if he had wanted to and chose not to. He saw that we were in trouble getting the votes because of the Armstrong situation, so he called for a recess. Lloyd Benson, another Democrat who was chairman of the committee, also by that time had figured out what was going wrong. And when Boren asked for a recess, Benson granted it to give us time to fix it. So we had two Democratic senators who bought us 30 minutes or so of time to fix this right in the middle of a hearing. What happened is that we immediately called President Reagan because this is one, if you're going to fix it in 30 minutes, you better pull out all the clout you have. So we said, Mr. President, we got a problem here. We need another vote. He called Bill Armstrong, and Bill said, no, I'm going to vote against it. He was unhappy with the White House for not taking a strong enough stance on child labor in China. And this was his way to send a message to President Reagan in the White House to complain about child labor in China. And so he insisted that he was going to maintain his no vote. So that didn't work. But we had a Democratic senator, no longer living, who saved the day, Spark Matsunaga of Hawaii. Spark was going to vote against it, President Reagan called him. He agreed to change his vote, and that was the vote we needed. And it was Lloyd Benson, Dave Bourne, and Spark Matsunaga, three Democrats, who saved the day, and we launched the U.S.-Canada Free Trade Agreement, which is the most important free trade agreement, bilateral free trade agreement in the history of this country and in the history of the world, for that matter. And as you probably know, U.S. agricultural trade with Canada and also Mexico when it was added with NAFTA has quadrupled since that agreement was negotiated, and overall trade between the U.S. and Canada has quadrupled since that agreement was negotiated. But that just shows that, you know, if you can get bipartisan cooperation, you can get things done. Regrettably, it's a little harder these days, in fact, a lot harder. Back in my days as secretary, we all had our farm bills. I had the 1990 farm bill, which was somewhat in the aftermath of what Jack was doing in the 80s, and things were getting better then, but we put an immense amount of subsidies into agriculture in the late 1980s. My task was to take some of those back out of the system again as we went in the early 90s. And we did that and established a lot more market-oriented farm bill in the 1990 legislation that we'd had before. But, you know, it served American agriculture well, and one of the things it demonstrated was that we really don't have to have a lot of subsidies in agriculture, because I think we got the subsidies down to the lowest level in like 1991 or 1992, somewhere along there, the lowest level that they'd been since those programs were started in the 30s, I think like $4 or $5 billion in grand total, counting everything and including crop insurance at that time. And yet we had a very healthy American agriculture at that time. So there are ways to do it if you do it properly. And I think that's enough for now. Let's go to questions. Thanks, everybody.